You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse. Snacky Tunes.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm your host, Darren Bresnitz. We head to the Lone Star State, my second home, Austin, Texas, to chat with Tracy Malachek Ezekiel and Arjav Ezekiel, the co-owners of Birdie's, one of the top restaurants to emerge in the last few years. Their son, Remy, is also in the mix for the conversation. And they give us an up-to-date take on the local dining scene, how they have built a new model for a restaurant in Texas, and who gets to pick the playlist at their fine casual spot. And then we head deep into the archives. We're talking a decade for one of our favorite performances from singer-songwriter Cassandra Jenkins, who stopped by to talk about growing up in a musical family and played some songs from her latest album at the time, Play Till You Win. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy Snacky Tunes here on Heritage Radio Network.
Now what you are, and it does me no good, no good. Now I know, now I know, now I know.
Tracy, Arjav, Little Remy, welcome to Snacky Tunes. Thank you for making time with the restaurant and being new parents. Really appreciate it. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're thrilled to be here. Big fans.
Thank you. So used to live in Austin, huge fan of the culinary scene, but it's been a minute since we've had someone from the city on the show. Can you give us a little bit of perspective? What's the local scene like?
Yeah, I think it's a really exciting time to be in Austin. You know, I think the national news media has been really captivated by what's going on with tech moving here.
Sure.
What's happened in the restaurant industry, it's been really like an exciting 4 or 5 years here. I think there are restaurants that are kind of pushing the envelope with what they're doing with their business models. And I think that includes us to some degree. You know, but I think it's a really exciting time to eat here. There are a few restaurateurs that are doing like world-class kind of food, but all kind of done in humble, easy-to-access settings. And I think that's what kind of makes Austin's dining scene unique.
Yeah, I mean, you two are fellow New York expats who went through the fine dining circuit there. But now you live in Austin, you have a newborn baby. So I think the question might answer itself, but what made you want to leave the city? And Tracy, I know that you're from Texas, but was Austin calling or were you just like, we just got to get out of the Big Apple?
At first, we were between a few cities. We were between Los Angeles, Portland, Oregon, and Austin. And we always tell the story, we flipped a coin.
No.
The final verdict was Portland, Oregon, or Austin. And Austin won. And I think it was, you know, serendipitous, because I think it's the right place for us. We've met this incredible community, super supportive, made a lot of friends. And it's just a really great town. And, you know, I think we casually chatted about dreaming of opening something in New York or Brooklyn. And then we were just crunching numbers and watching so many fantastic restaurants with the most talented teams just go out of business or have to shutter because of a landlord or just, you know, whatever New York City racket item came at them. It was just like, this is nuts, you know? Like, we love New York for sure.
Of course.
Always will. It's the best. But
yeah,
it just wasn't looking like it made financial sense. We also knew we wanted to have a family at some point. We wanted to have a little bit of a work-life balance. So we closed for Sunday, Monday. We have a backyard. We have two dogs. And, you know, we just couldn't put those things together in our heads in New York, you know, and whoever can, more power to them. But we could not figure that out, that magic
formula. And one of the philosophical underpinnings of, like, you know, having moved here right before the pandemic, like, we moved here in 2018. We signed the lease for this restaurant like a month before the pandemic shut down the entire restaurant industry.
So wow.
In February, right before everything closed in like mid-March of that year. But one of the philosophical underpinnings of this restaurant is very much like, we want the restaurant to work for us. Like, we don't necessarily always want to be the people who work for the restaurant. And it was very clear to us, if we were in New York and to some extent LA, that just the unit economics of like how you would have to operate a restaurant meant that you had to open 7 days a week, likely lunch and dinner, maybe even breakfast, just to like put the like a roof over your head. And I think for us, it was like, okay, how do we build a restaurant that fits our life and lifestyle and kind of work backwards from there? So like for us, it was really about finding the right real estate deal. So we spent, you know, almost 2 years looking for the right like deal, and then we found it. We opened this restaurant on a really kind of shoestring budget, We opened with like, you know, dollar plates from like Crate and Barrel.
Sure.
We've been able to upgrade over time, but it was like, okay, let's create like a minimum viable product first and then like, grow from there rather than like open like a restaurant with all the bells and whistles right off the jump.
Sure. Not shipping down scalloped Fish's Eddie's plates that can be broken in transit, right?
Yeah.
And also New York, I think the labor laws, you know, are kind of nuts. And, you know, we couldn't tip out our cooks and our dishwashing team. We just couldn't take care of them the way we would want to. So that was another big reason.
Now, you two met at Untitled, which was, I'd say, a harbinger of things to come, of restaurants and things like that, of opening up in museums and hotels and things like that. But beyond that shift in the restaurant opening, how did you two actually meet at the restaurant? And did you guys know?
Tell the story. I'm not telling it.
I want to hear it. Come on.
You want to tell him?
Yeah, well, we met initially. Our job was a captain and I was a sous chef and we were kind of friends. And, then he got promoted to manager and we both, so Untitled was in the meatpacking district, the base of the Whitney Museum. Mm-hmm. We both lived in the East Village. So once we both were on the closing shift, we'd closing manager. So we'd get out late, we'd take the L train home or walk across town and, you know, some nights you'd be like, hey, you want to grab a Negroni, you know, after service. And we just became friends. And we'd actually always joke we would split at the halal cart on, first. Yeah. And be like, see you tomorrow, you know. But there was one night we were grabbing Negronis at a dive on right by Thompson Square Park.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, I think we're really in line professionally. I think someday we should open a restaurant together. I think it would be really great. And, you know, I'd do the back, you do the front, and it would be awesome. And our job was like, you know what else we should do together? And I was like, what? And he was like, we should get married. And I said, excuse
this
me?
This is like before we'd gone on our first
date. I was going to say, also, you led with the business proposals, usually the other way around.
I mean, he just was on the blaze and had that liquid confidence. And so that would kind of became like the start of our, is this going to be more, you know, than friends relationship?
Oh my God.
We've been married for almost 5 years and a baby. So.
Wow. Yeah. Well, how did you take that step then to actual business partners? Because it is one thing to have Negronis and to dream and to think. It's quite another thing to say, we're going to actually put our lives together financially as well.
Well, I think once we started dating, it was kind of like one of those like New York accelerants where you're like, okay, I have to like save money on rent. So we kind of jumped into it like almost we moved in with each other just under a year after we started dating. And then I think like we got, you know, engaged like right around a year or two of our dating cycle. And we were like, okay, we're engaged. Like what's the next kind of natural step here? We were in like a tiny like shoebox apartment in Brooklyn. And I think we'd just kind of gotten to the tipping point, right? I think we'd been there, Tracy'd been there a long time. I was in DC before that, but we just kind of gotten to a tipping point where we're like, okay, we're ready to settle down, we're ready to like, we've made this commitment to each other. Let's think about where we want to go and like what we would do if we went there. And I think we started putting together some like broad stroke ideas on, like the restaurant we'd want to open.
Made a bad business plan.
It was a good business plan. It was just like very different than what we did.
Right.
I don't know if our numbers were, it was just actually a totally different concept. Initially it was like, it was going to be like a Gramercy Tavern Italian of Austin or something.
I mean, well, given where you're working, where you're met and being in New York, that makes sense. Cause you're like, well, I'm just going to recreate the mold just in sort of my shape.
Right.
And, you know, who doesn't love something off the grill and with, you know,
cocktails? Oh, yeah.
What's not to love? But I think the reality is once we were like, okay, this is a budget. We're in a pandemic. We don't have a lot of money behind us. We're like trying to together investors. So let's keep this as lean and mean as possible. And so it just became this like evolution. This concept kept evolving throughout the pandemic, throughout the space when we found it without a broker. It was like, you know, to put in a massive grill that could support oak and fire and that what that hood system would look like, yeah, would just be astronomical for our scrappy budget. And we're like, yep, you know, maybe that's concept two if we get there, but let's just do what we can for as limited amount of a budget as possible. So that's how Birdies kind of came about.
Yeah, we went from like being this like, you know, like Tracy was saying, like this Italian version of a Gramercy Tavern to like a breakfast concept. Mm. A good friend of ours was like, don't do that. That's really stupid. You guys should not do breakfast concepts. You're not going to make any money.
Also, we're not morning people, so I don't know what we were thinking.
Yeah.
We built our business model around counter service because of that. After eating at Squirrel and seeing how well that did, sure, like Destroyer, and we're kind of like, oh, this is cool. Like you could do elevated food with counter service. But then we said, who made the rule? We can't do this at night at dinner with a big wine list. And we said, you know, that's like the inherent risk maybe in our business model, but like let's try it. So we opened this kind of like what we like to call fine casual restaurant. So it's a super chill restaurant. Like the music's turned up, but like the level of food and hopefully the wine match something you would expect at a fine dining restaurant. But it's all done with counter service. So you order your food and you get a flag, you sit down, and then you have service after that. But you don't have a host. You don't have a maitre d'. You don't have a captain, a server, a back waiter. So we, you know, on any given night, we have four people in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And six people in the dining room. And we do like 180, 200 covers a night. So,
wow.
So it's like a really lean labor model.
Yeah.
But that was also very much as an attempt, one, to figure out how do we keep our, you know, our team really well paid without necessarily harming the business in any way, right? So everybody, the nice thing about Birdies for like the dishwasher, the cooks, we're allowed to tip out anyone in Texas as long as you're paying them above minimum wage. Don't take a tip credit, but everybody on the team participates in a flat tip pool, which means that we don't have a point system. So we're not valuing a server's labor anymore.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which is the dishwasher. Like last week, for example, like the dishwasher made $32 an hour. The week before that, the dishwasher made $40 an hour. So did our server, so did our cook. You know, so it's a flat labor model where we kind of collect and pool tips weekly and then distribute them based on the number of hours somebody works.
Amazing. Well, let's take a quick little musical break because when I come back, I want to hear a little bit more about this approach to this type of dining at night, the menu building, and then also some of the music that you play at the restaurant because I know that's a big part of what you do as well. We have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on Heritage Radio Network.
In the water and fading away, touching the sky for once in my life. Heaven can wait, but not tonight. Even the window of things that I lack, wherever I go with you now. Some say dreaming is a waste of time. I've got nothing else in my life. Different yeah, everyone's right. And the lights you took with you, they left me tonight. Surfing down colors and rivers of blood, and the sun making shapes in my head. Some say dreaming is a waste of time. I can't get you out of my mind. Driving down on the 45, and in only second
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We are here with Tracy and Arjav of Birdies down in Austin, Texas. And so I think part of the spotlight that's been shined on Austin over the last few years is not just the restaurant scene and, you know, how that's grown, but also a focus on the local produce and building a network of different purveyors and things like that. How have you worked with them to influence your menu over the last few years?
Sure. So it was a bit of a challenge, just in that coming from New York and going mm-hmm. to the Square Green Market a few times a week, you know, it's just a different dynamic here. So there are a couple markets here. They're not near as generous as that of Union Square. You know, I'm used to going to the market, you know, you see what's beautiful, you grab it, you put on the dish for that day and it's live and it's rolling and it's romantic. But here, just by nature of the scene here, you have to work directly with farmers, you develop relationships, which is awesome. You know, it's more of like you order off email lists. So you kind of learn what you like when and becoming, you know, friends with these farmers. It's just a different style of menu planning, and it's, you just kind of have to get ahead of it a little bit, and it's a little bit of trial and error. There's also a company, Farm to Table, that delivers for a whole lot of restaurants. So you can get smaller farmers around Texas and ranchers who don't have the bandwidth or the, you know, financial means to deliver to all these restaurants in Austin, Houston, Dallas. And they're kind of that middleman support. So it's different. So I think that was a challenge in the beginning. And by nature of being a seasonal restaurant, especially with times challenging growing conditions, because Austin it's tough. A lot of the soil can be tough. The weather is, you know, 80 one day, it's 25 the next, and then vice, you know, back at 75 the next day. And that just makes it really hard for our farmers. You know, we've got some really awesome ones and they're just like, man, you know, we lost everything in this freeze, you know, a couple of weeks ago. And it's just tough growing conditions. We get tomatoes in January and sometimes December. It's just totally different, you know, which I love because I like a challenge.
Right.
So it's getting used to the new seasons is definitely interesting. Having like gazpacho on the menu next to something else, maybe a smoked tomato soup in the winter, but nonetheless, it's definitely like a different, how do I say, like a different arrangement.
Cadence.
Yeah. A different cadence of produce.
Building off on that and knowing that things can change depending on what's available at the market and up and down, also having this type of service is an interesting approach as well, because you come from fine dining background and you also want to have this dinner approach that most pops up during breakfast or lunch. Right. How do you foster this, the fine part of the fine casual, where people don't feel like that they're getting up and they're getting picked, or it just feels like the food's getting dropped off? How do you build that environment nightly?
That's a really good question. So for us, like we have a couple of kind of like touch points that are really important, right? So the place where you order your food at the counter is a really important moment for us, because we treat that very much like a server would when they first come to your table at a restaurant. So you get a spiel, like you taste wine. It's very like, the closest analogy is kind of like that first intro like a server might make when they come to your table at a fine dining restaurant. And then once you sit down, we have all your needs taken care of you. So we kind of use two approaches to that. So the first approach is there are a couple of servers that are always kind of roaming the dining room. They're in charge of clearing tables, resetting tables, bringing you fresh silverware, bringing you fresh glassware. When you sit down, like somebody brings you water to your table and a couple of glasses. We also use a QR code at every single table to allow people to order wine using their cell phone. If someone wants to order like an extra glass of wine or dessert because they weren't sure they had enough like food when they ordered up front, we allow them to use a QR code on their phone that ties into our POS system. And then they can order anything off our by the glass list, bottle list, and dessert just using their cell phones.
That's great. And the response has obviously been pretty amazing. Given how much local and national press that you have, but added to that new type of service is also, and I know we touched on this a little bit, is the new approach to running the restaurant. And I think the lean nature, the ability to tap out, but also, and obviously this applies to you now, but having things like paternity and maternity leave, why was that important to you? How does the way that you do service and also the way that you run your business all work together?
Well, I think, you know, we've worked in a lot of great restaurants. And I think, like, I was in New York since I graduated from CIA in 2008. And I kind of saw, I guess, a little bit of the old generation restaurants and how they worked. It's just, you know, a different mentality and a different style in many different areas. But I guess overall, we took from the things we loved from our restaurant experience and then left the things we didn't love. And we just said, you know what? We just want to create the space we want. And Texas is kind of like the Wild West. You know, you can do a lot as a entrepreneur. I think that's why so many are attracted to come here. And so it's been empowering to be able to kind of just create the model we want and take care of our team the way we want to. We also provide a month of paid time off a year. We do a couple weeks in the summer for our summer break and then a couple weeks over the holidays in the winter. I always, you know, was bummed for Christmas when I was by myself in New York, you know, many, many years. And I just thought it was important that people, you know, can be with their loved ones on holidays and stuff.
Absolutely.
It's a core tenet of like who we are as a restaurant, in part because, you know, paternity and maternity leave is a great example. Like family leave didn't really feel like a real thing. It was like a very much an intellectual exercise till we had Remy, who has been the soundtrack to this wonderful Snacky Tunes podcast.
If we could have more kids on the show, we would. And we tell people all the time.
We apologize in advance for
no apologies. We're family friendly.
Yeah. There you go. Nice big burp. But you know, I think one thing, like Remy's with us at the restaurant most nights, right?
I love that.
We also are very aware of the fact that we're in a very privileged position as owners to be able to do that.
Sure.
It became very clear to us that in the absence of like, you know, subsidized childcare, it's a very, very hard for people, young people, who are, however old they are, to like take that time that's so important after you have a baby to like bond, like build a family, like all those things. And it's impossible for me now with Remy to think about how I could imagine building something that I thought of as a career in an industry that didn't allow for that. So for us, it's really about continuing to be a voice. And I should say there are a lot of people doing really interesting, innovative things in this space now. But our goal at the end of the day is to continue to professionalize this industry and continue to be a place where people can come, develop. You know, we have really high expectations for our team. We give a lot, but we also ask a lot. But it, like anything, it has to be a two-way street. Like we like our team puts a lot of energy and effort into their work every day. So it only feels fair for us to reward them with, you know, mental health care so that they have access to cheap, affordable, like therapy services if they need it, you know? And it's part of like this industry. It should be part of this industry. But, you know, I think when we started off and Trace and I were talking about this restaurant concept and the reason we ended up with counter service is it was really important for us to be a healthy, profitable business.
Mm-hmm.
So we could do those things. Right. I think a lot of times, like, and this is always my impression, I don't have any like hard evidence to back this up, but you know, in New York or whatever, we talked about the toxic restaurant culture that is like
sure.
time now, right? And I think a lot of that comes from like ownership, chefs, whatever it is, like general managers under so much pressure to like make that extra percent here or whatever it is, that they're under such incredible pressure.
Or to keep the lights on.
Just to keep the lights on, right?
And it's payroll, like,
And how can you expect to take care of people if you can't take care of yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So for us, it's like, okay, our team has to be able to take care of themselves mentally, financially, emotionally, spiritually, so they can take really good care of our team, our guests, you know? So it's very much like that kind of approach. And we try as much as we can to meet our team where they are. But also, it's a helpful thing for the business, right? Like it helps with retention. It helps. Like, you know, taking a month off every year is expensive as hell because we pay people to take that time off. But they come back recharged, inspired. The idea that, like, they come back with ideas that will generate the revenue that, like, maybe it cost us to send them away, right? So it's like those that, like, we give our management team, like, an educational bonus so that they can use, on travel if they want to. On those vacations. So we'll pay for your ticket to go to France and study you know, winemaking, whatever. But then we expect you to come back and share some of those lessons with the team.
So obviously been open for 2 years and this is a new type of approach.
Not even quite 2 years.
Not even quite. It's a little under 2 years, a little under. What's the learning curve been on this type of approach? What have you had to adjust?
Our expectations.
I think we have we try to have a really positive outlook. To be totally honest, I think coming from New York where everyone's kind of intense,
yeah.
I think some people are like, you guys are intense. And we're like, what? We're relaxed.
No, you know, it's a thing. It's just a thing. When you start coming west, people are like, huh? Okay.
I'm like, I'm not even like in the top 10 most intense people I've ever worked
with.
You know?
So it's a little different, you know, mentality. But we do have a fantastic team. And personally, the biggest challenge and thing I've been surprised with was it wasn't even opening the restaurant because, you know, you're trained to open a restaurant as a restaurant professional by studying with these, you know, fantastic mentors throughout the years. So I think the restaurant opening was like relatively easy in the scheme of things.
It was
getting pregnant. We did IVF for a time and like did fertility stuff. A lot of failed procedures and, you know, a lot of medicine they put you on that makes it also challenging, you know,
very
running.
Tough. Yeah.
And then once I got pregnant, you know, which was like truly a miracle, I got extraordinarily sick.
For 3 months, for like all 9 months.
Not just like a little thing here and there. It was debilitating. You know, I could like barely stand up some nights at the pass. I changed the menu. I took off all fried items because I couldn't smell the fry oil. I was wearing a 95 mask even when COVID, you know.
You're like, sorry, guys. No fries. No nothing.
I mean, I was relying on like my sous chef to taste pastas because I physically would have to go to the bathroom. And you know, that I think was the biggest challenge because I couldn't get out of bed for most of the day. Our job would have to take on my responsibilities, or, oh, we got short of this. You know, where are we going to get this? Bart from our friend's restaurant. Okay. Can you go get it? You know, I can't, I'm literally like, could hardly have a conversation in bed. Right. So I think, and not being prepared for that, you know, not having a game plan for that, that would really knocked us on our socks. And, our team just, thankfully they were amazing. They stepped up, they did extra, they, you know, had our backs, because that was extraordinarily, that was probably the hardest time of my life.
Yeah, it was hard on like us as a couple. It was hard on us as a restaurant.
Sure.
Individually. And I think, like, you know, obviously now we're on the other side of it and it was all worth it. But like, there were days we had a line like down the block out the front door. And like, I was shooting Tracy up with her medications, you know, and like in the bathrooms in the middle of service, like we stopped the line because like you have to do when you're doing IV, their shots have to happen at a certain time. And like I'm literally, we're in the bathroom, like administering those like medications in the middle of service. So, you know, I think the thing I learned a lot about Tracy was that like, she's definitely the most strong like person I've ever been around. And I've been around a lot of strong people in my life. And it kind of gives you a sense as to like, you know, how lucky you are too, to like be with someone you can like ride and do all this stuff with, as hard as it is. I think, you know, that was certainly like a really hard chapter for us. I think the other thing that maybe caught us off guard wasn't hard. It was just like a matter of adapting and learning, was we never expected to be as busy as we are. Like, I think maybe people have this like impression that, oh, like they did this like counter service thing just so they had a line. Like, we never thought we'd have a line. We thought maybe we'd have like three people deep, right? Like, to come eat dinner. Like, we just never thought we would be as busy as of a restaurant as we are. Like, even my best case projections before we opened, like, we doubled that last year, right?
Wow.
So I think that was very much like a moment where we had to say, hey, like, Tracy and I sat down, we're like, we have to change. Like, the restaurant that we thought of in our head, like, we're no longer that restaurant. We're no longer just like a neighborhood casual restaurant. Like, there was a couple that flew in from Norway just to eat at Birdie's, and they flew back like the next night. And like, and that was when Tracy and I sat down, we're like, I think it's okay for us to say that like, people are driving across the city to come to us. People are flying in to come eat like at Birdie's, you know, because we're doing something maybe that's a little bit different than most people have seen at a restaurant. And like, it's okay. Like, we can say that to ourselves without being dicks. You know, we're not like full of ourselves just because we say like, people are like traveling to eat here. And I think both of us wanted to put ourselves in a place where like, we don't want to talk about some of this stuff. It's like crazy that this is all happening, because it very much was. But the second we started acknowledging some of that, we changed some of our systems. Like, we created more SOPs. We made it easier for like our management team to like operate the restaurant when we weren't here. And that's taken time, but you know, Tracy and I sat down for dinner for the first time at our restaurant a month ago.
Wow. With or without Remy?
With Remy.
Of course. I mean, that's what an incredible thing to have, and to see him and to have the restaurant. And it's a beautiful thing. And it speaks testament to like what you've built and what you've been able to do. And I know that you say, you know, maybe you don't think of yourself as a neighborhood restaurant, but I have found that, look, you've gotten a lot of great awards, people are coming in, but the restaurants that do last are the ones that have that, at least in the core, like the idea of serving the neighborhood and like being part of the community.
Our regulars are part of our family.
Yeah.
I think like, they were part of our journey with Remy too. Like, there's so many of our regulars who brought Remy like clothes and like created like custom Birdie's gear for them. And like, you know, we were just incredibly lucky to have like this community, not just of the guests that walk in and the people who work here, but the broader restaurant community in Austin is what is maybe the most, I'll go as far as to say, the most collaborative, genuinely like excited restaurant community I've ever been around. There's no sense of competitiveness here. There's very much a sense that every, like, you know, rising tide lifts all ships. Our closest friends here have gone out of their way to like support us, especially when Remy came. Like, the restaurant community fed us for the first 3 weeks, you know, because we got home and like, didn't we have so much going on. Like, every day, Fiore, a good friend of ours who owns Locadoro in Austin.
Oh, yeah.
Fiore set up a meal train for us. And like, Every chef in the city bought food for us for 3 weeks.
Probably the best tasting, and this is no offense to any other meal train, but to have the best chefs in Austin be like, and here you go. Here's the comfort food you need at your house. It's
Yeah. Great.
Totally nuts.
So all you gotta do is get pregnant, work in the restaurant industry in Austin, and then you get like the most incredible meal train from the community.
Exactly. Move to Austin, Texas, everybody.
Were you getting biscuits? Were you getting some Olamae biscuits as well?
We went and picked up some Olamae biscuits, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, pregnant or not, or kid or not, I'll take those biscuits any day. I want to make sure that we fit in one last thing about the restaurant, because it's such a beautiful story, and the service and the family community you built. But the music and the playlist has also gotten a lot of recognition. I've read about it in a couple of articles. What can people expect on the soundtrack? Who's putting the music together? What's the vibe you're trying to create?
I do the playlist mostly. I used to be really into music before I started cooking. Mm-hmm. I started cooking, I mean, kind of late, at like 22. I, you know, just played soccer as a kid, went to college, and went to a lot of shows, like a lot of like indie rock and like local bands and some like small punk rock bands kind of music. And I always just love the spirit, the aliveness of that. And I think I took, like, I'll make playlists that are like different chapters of my life. Like, I've got like late 90s, early 2000s, early 90s R&B, like I would listen to in seventh grade getting ready for school. And so I just kind of, I think it is personal, the playlist, because it's like a chapter or a moment of life. Or sometimes we'll play whole albums just depending on the weather outside. So it does feel personal. It feels like you're coming to our house, you know, for a dinner party. And I think that the music, sometimes it is a little loud. And I think whenever we open, people in Austin weren't always used to that. I think in New York, there's a lot of fun, loud restaurants. But Austin, I think we were pretty early on there.
I think Buffalina.
Yeah, Buffalina.
I love Buffalina. Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. But yeah, I just kind of want the playlist to kind of starts a little chill at 4:30, mm-hmm. and then progresses throughout the night to be more lively on Friday, Saturdays. There's definitely maybe a little bit more of like a dancey kind of vibe. It just depends on the weather and, like, you know,
also who's
what you're feeling
at the restaurant.
Yeah,
you know, sure. I think, like, if, sometimes the early crowd is like people my parents' age, and like for me, like, music is about nostalgia as much as anything else, right? So it's like listening to the Beatles and the Mamas and the Papas, like that reminds me of like my parents. So like we'll play like the Beatles and the Mamas and the Papas sometimes early on, even though it's like maybe not the coolest thing to listen to, but it makes the people who are eating here feel nostalgic and feel special. And I think nostalgia and music are, like, for me, like, that's the thing that about music I love the most, is kind of reminds me also, like Tracy, like different chapters in my life, whether it was like moving to America or like, you know, the first 5 years we were here and like, what we listened to, like the stuff we listened to while we were in India. It always, like, those are the soundtracks of like our life as much as anything else. And so we change our music a lot. And like the only thing Tracy and I really argue about at work is the music, because I'll want to play something versus she'll want to play something.
And they'll be like in the way wrong order. And we'll just like keep, you know, old married couple at the past fighting over the iPad selection. Like, no, that's the wrong vibe right now. No.
Well, listen, if that's the only thing you're fighting over, then I would say a testament to your success and approach. If people want to come to Birdies, they want to follow along with everything and what you're up to, where can they go? How can they follow along?
Yeah, we don't have a phone number. We do have a website, and that's birdiesaustin.com. And if you want to communicate with us, Instagram's the best way, birdiesaustin on Instagram.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, listen, thank you so much, Remy, you cutie. Is he sleeping?
Yeah, he's taking a little nap.
Oh, my God. So cute. You know, he is the first baby to fall asleep in the middle of an interview here. So it says, I say we did a great job. Thank you again to Bailey. Thank you again for sitting down. We have a song from the archives and then a live performance here on Snacky Tunes on Heritage Radio Network.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2-Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio.
So we have Sam Austin and Cassandra all joining us. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us on this Sunday.
So happy to be here.
And a big shout out to Andrew Oposo for making this all happen.
Andrew has made so many things happen to me.
He's a real mensch.
Andrew of Jessica Six, Midnight Magic, Hercules Love Affair. And also, like, why we saw him last night, and the first thing he said to us was, he's like, you know what I'm super excited about? I'm like, what? He's like, Cassandra's going to be on the show tomorrow. And we're like, wow, that's the first. He's just thinking about you.
Such a sweet guy. And bass player extraordinary.
One of the best.
And best bass face.
Oh, yeah.
Top 5
yeah.
bass face. Just especially when they were doing the fully mixed Hercules Love Affair sets, and he was doing the transitions, and he was conducting with his face. Oh my god,
man, that was before my time.
Was it?
Yep.
But you've been in New York though.
I've been in New York. Andrew and I became very fast friends because of the New York connections. Like when we found out that we were drinking at the same bars when we were 16.
Which ones? Like,
Well, the Abbey Pub is
a
great place to go before you're 21.
Blue that and place. Gold is good, too.
Yep.
Yeah. Cherry Bar on 6th.
Yeah.
I was an uptown lady.
Oh, yeah. Oh. And your family's still up there, right?
They are, yeah. They're still up there.
And they're still playing music.
Yeah, we had a house concert last night.
Yeah, tell me about the house concerts.
We've been doing them for 12 years now. And
have you missed any?
I've missed a few.
Just a few, though.
Just a few. I try to be there whenever I can.
Are they an annual thing during the wintertime?
They're actually monthly, believe it or not. And we're having 2 this month.
You've only missed a few and they're monthly?
They're monthly, yeah.
So what are they?
Well, last night we had a harpist, a solo harpist. It was beautiful.
And who's we?
We is my family. I am a member of a family of 5, the Jenkins family. And my mom actually has a blog called the Jenkins House Concerts blog, and she posted Snacky Tunes today.
Ooh. Yeah. Thanks, Mom.
Very excited. It went out to the blog community. Oh,
big on the uptown.
Thanks, dear Mom.
Mommy bloggers. Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah.
But basically, it's a format of, we invite 65 people or so to our house. That's a comfortable number. Sometimes it gets bigger than that. And
where do you live?
I live on the Upper West Side. Believe it or not, you wouldn't think that this apartment would fit 65 people, but we make it happen every month. And we invite a guest artist, usually a band, to come play 2 sets of music. There's always an intermission in between when people get wine and food. And usually my family will open in some way, shape, or form. And so last night, my sister and I sang a Carter Family song, and my brother played a new song that he wrote. Yep.
Naturally.
And next, in a couple weeks, we have Tony Trischka, the great banjo player, coming to play. It's a holiday-themed show.
Can I ask you a question?
Of course.
Partridge Family or Brady Bunch?
We've gotten actually more, what's it called? The Wes Anderson film.
Royal Tannenbaums?
We got that more than we did Partridge Family.
That seems like a modern thing. And what does, entire family play?
We all play. My dad is a piano player. Growing up, he made a living playing in all the hotels around New York. So the St. Regis, the Plaza.
Carlisle?
The Carlisle. He just played a gig at the Carlisle. He was very excited about it.
He's
one
of those like hotel piano players of like yesteryear.
He's kind of a dying breed.
Oh my God. What's his tip cup look like?
It depends on who's coming in that night. You know, I actually don't know. I haven't seen it in a while.
I imagine goblet, but I don't think that's
or vase. Yeah.
I think it depends on the place.
I think one of my fantasies as a child was being that type of piano player, but then I, gave up.
It's crazy. He knows so many songs.
Does he have a bow tie that he's never actually tied, just that's draped around his neck?
You know, he used to wear a tuxedo to work. And that became kind of uncool at a certain point.
Can you let me know when he's playing next and I can just go and like sit
there? Actually, we should have him come in.
I would love
that. Is there
do you guys have a grand piano?
We don't, but would he be willing to like figure something out?
Absolutely. He's got a travel kit.
Can he if he could just riff in the background for an hour?
Oh, that would be the best.
Yeah. He riffs, right?
My dad riffs.
One more story about your dad. Just one more question. I mean, I have actually a lot of questions.
I hope he's listening right now.
Does he have any of those, like, I was with, Belinda Carlisle, like,
really? Wrong
the
one.
Rainbow Room. And
no, I have the like, the rap hat. Oh, yeah. Like, and Frank.
Oh, Bernadette, I have stories. I don't know. I don't know how much time we have.
We have time. We have time for this.
When I was a kid, I remember going to Little Italy, and my mom just knowing everybody down there. Just be like, hey, Patsy. Da, da, da. And later on, I found out that they used to play at SPQR, which is now closed. May it rest in peace.
Pour out a glass of vino for it.
They were the house band, and they would play. Occasionally, they would play. I'm air quoting, private parties.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really like a mafia hangout.
Wow!
And they were there.
Gentlemen's Club, speakeasy.
they were. They would play so that it had the vibe of a party.
And what was touring with your family like growing up?
Touring was really fun. We actually spent a lot of time in Maine, so I was excited to hear some Maine stories today.
Did you eat lobster up there?
We ate tons of lobster.
I wonder if they ever went to your grandparents' restaurant. Maybe.
That would
blow my mind. I would have to lay down if you and your parents went to...
Well, we'll have to go there at some point on our way up this summer. We go to Swan's Island every summer. And there's a tiny festival about halfway up the coast. And we would travel in a 1956 GMC bus to get there with lots of instruments in tow. And at that point, it felt more like Beverly Hillbillies than it did Royal Tannenbaums. Okay.
Well, that movie hadn't come out yet, so it's an unfair comparison.
Yeah. We spent a lot of time traveling that way, and it's currently in upstate New York. The motor needs some work, but Dad's working on it.
It's working.
Well, why don't we? Why don't we get a song?
Oh my God!
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we were thinking about playing one that we just wrote actually this month, after listening to Snacky Tunes, shortly after Lou Reed passed away on Daylight Savings Day.
I believe in the perfect day and the stardust of a melody. This day is a perfect day. Leaves fall in time with the song. I
Can you hear playing through the walls? Keeps me hanging.
Awesome. That is really the best drum setup that we have seen here. Someone who really understood the room that we were playing in.
This is Austin Vaughn on the drums, by the way.
What up, Austin? Say what's up.
Hello, Snackatoon's audience.
Let's, and Cassandra's mom. And Cassandra's mom's blog follower.
Yeah, and my dad.
And your dad. Let's. How did the three of you meet?
Yeah.
Well, actually, I... Yeah, let's get Austin in on this.
How about this?
This goes deep.
Let's let Austin speak for a second.
Sam and I met probably before we were in high school, right? Because we're both from North Carolina.
Yeah, 15.
And Sam, well, too bad you didn't bring your clarinet, but when I met Sam, he was playing saxophone.
Oh, I was... You promised clarinet, no clarinet.
Yeah. I forgot it.
No, man. All right.
It's a spacey Sunday.
We still have that Sundays. It's Sunday. Tough on Sundays.
Yeah, it's tough.
But yeah, so we met each other when we were like young teenagers and then realized that we were both going to end up going to this school in North Carolina called North Carolina School of the Arts.
Yeah.
And we were in high school there like with college kids and we had the time of our lives. And then...
And we were roommates.
That's true. We were each other's first roommates, and now we live together now.
Yeah.
But so then when Sam moved to New York way before I did, and he was like, you definitely should move here. I was like, I don't want to do that. And then I did. And then I met Cassandra through a guy named Jonathan Rosen, who is brothers with a guy named Michael Rosen, who's in a band called Icewater. And I introduced Sam to Cassandra, or vice versa.
That's true.
Yeah.
At the Manhattan Inn.
It was at the Manhattan Inn.
Who also has a piano player from time to time.
They do, like very much like my dad.
Yeah, has your dad ever been there?
No, I really want to get him a gig there. Yeah. But yeah.
It would make the story, it would like add another layer to the story you just told.
Let's add that layer.
Yeah, let's add that layer. Dad, if you're listening, let's add the layer.
Yeah, there's some really good music happening at the Manhattan Inn these days.
And shout out to Brooke, who is one of the founders, like an old friend of ours who started Glassland Gallery.
Cool.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
And she just had a kid.
She did have a kid. That baby is cute up on the Instagram.
Yeah.
Up. What?
I was giving Austin a little thumbs up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You
know,
that was a good...
I used to have a radio show. I had multiple radio shows in college.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't have...
He's a radio man.
The mic scared me.
So now when the three of you met, how did it kind of transform to, you know, what we're looking at here?
That's a good question.
Yeah, when did three become one?
Can I collaboration?
Yeah.
Austin introduced us at the Manhattan Inn. It was a Greg Saunier solo drums night, and we were all there hanging out, appreciating the music. And
what is solo drums?
Austin, you want to show us what solo drums is?
It's when you play alone.
When you play alone.
Oh, so like literally.
It's really exciting. Yeah.
The drummer in my band, his name is Max Almario, and he works at the Manhattan Inn. He's a bartender, and he curates, because he's a drummer, he curates this night. I think it's usually on Sundays, and it's all like solo drummers, and they come in, and it's.
Wait, is it fun. Solo drummers together?
No, by themselves.
A series. Okay. It's a series, yeah. But shortly thereafter, I went to go see Celestial Shore, Sam's band, at Glasslands, and we were all hanging out outside, and Austin looked at the two of us, and he said, you should collaborate. I think that'd be good. And Sam's response was, oh, there will be collaboration. Yeah. With full confidence. And here we are today.
Wow.
That's a bold
It was bold. I loved that.
It's a good line.
That was before we were dating.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, no.
You guys are dating?
Yeah, let's add that layer.
Yeah.
Oh.
You need lines like that.
So there's a lot of collaboration going on.
Yeah, Sam and I have been dating ever since, actually. And
wow. Was it that line?
Yep.
That line kind of did it for me. Yep.
Really?
Yeah.
Like firework.
And not to mention that I was also going to see Sam play guitar and that did it for me, too.
Hey, note to listeners. Dudes and bands get girls. You heard it here first on Snacky Dudes. Either pick up
a
guitar.
Go get that guitar right now.
Yeah, pick up a chef's knife. Yep. Get some girls.
He's a good cook, too.
What do you guys cook together?
Well, Austin and Sam have a really great dish that they made for me early on.
I can't take any credit.
Okay, well.
No, that's overused. Let's talk about another dish.
No, whoa. What's this dish?
Yeah. Well, actually, see, I hesitate because we used it. My band did an interview with Brooklyn Magazine, and they do this thing where you're given a budget of $20 and you have to cook, and they take pictures and interview you while you're doing it.
Well, look, here's the deal. No one's listening to this show, so you can talk about it.
Well, anyway, if you are listening, it's a cool thing.
What's
in the
dish?
Brooklyn Magazine. It's nachos, but it's kale quinoa nachos.
And chicken.
And chicken. Well, you can optional chicken thing.
For the veg?
Yeah, so you just like have a layer of, you make your own corn tortilla nachos. And then you put quinoa with red quinoa with black beans, garlic, and then you kind of throw that on top of the nachos and then put kale and then put it in the oven and the kale gets crispy and the nachos are crispy and it's like this kale sandwich thing. And then you put sriracha on it.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Get sriracha while you can.
It's good.
You guys all know about that, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy.
Crazy. Is it closed down or is it just closed down temporarily?
I think it's temporary. They're still selling it super hard at the fair.
There's too much money to be made in sriracha for it to close down fully.
I got so much money in sriracha stock right now that I'm nervous.
Yeah. Why don't we hear another song?
Okay.
Okay.
What are you guys going to play?
What do you want to do?
Well, I was going to say, if we were going to talk about one of my favorite recipes, we call it rabbit food, and it's some kind of like muesli creation.
It's the best.
It's really delicious and healthy. But we're going to play a song called Rabbit.
Oh.
That we wrote this summer. It was my first collaboration with Sam. And Austin plays drum on our recording of it.
Okay.
Ready?
Are you there, Austin?
Yeah.
Okay, ready?
It's also an adaptation of a Wallace Stevens poem.
Thank you.
At the end of the day, the shapeless shadow. Shadow covers the sun, nothing is left, and nothing is left except the light, except the light. Rushes west and west, rushes down. Feel that the light of the whole of the wideness of night is for.
I don't have really words for that. That was amazing.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Thank
you so much.
You have so many different types of drumsticks and accoutrement. Like, it's amazing.
You have to see him play solo.
I was going to say, and you hold your drumstick in a way that makes me think that I would love to see you really go to town on a drum set.
You should come see me play sometime.
I will absolutely come see you play.
You want to hear me pimp all the times I'm playing this week?
Yeah.
What's today?
Well, can we talk about Tuesday night's show?
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. Talk
about it. Because Sam is on that one, too.
Yeah.
So, well, maybe Sam. I don't really know what's up with that, but I'm super excited to be doing it. So go ahead, Sam.
Okay. Our friend Luke Temple of Luke Temple and Here We Go Magic, he's been booking a series at Union Pool that's kind of based around improvising, creating music spontaneously.
Spontaneous composition.
Yes, that would be the
instantaneous
way.
Composition.
Sure. So Luke booked Austin. Austin's going to be playing with a legend, Daniel Carter, a legend of the New York improvisational scene, going back to the 50s, 60s. I mean,
he was like born in '45 or something.
All right,
so he was in New York.
Got started at six.
He came in the '70s.
Once he got his hand on those pots and pans, he really just.
You know, he actually was living in North Carolina as a child.
Well,
and Ohio.
That makes sense.
You guys can talk about your favorite restaurants.
At any rate,
so
Austin's
playing
a duo with
him,
with Daniel Carter,
and I'm playing that's I'll be actually playing clarinet on this show with Jason.
As long as you remember it, right?
Yes, remember it with Jason Nazary, who's another great drummer of this band, Little Women, and some other great friends.
Are there any women in Little Women?
No,
of course not.
No,
course
but
not.
Have you seen this band?
No,
are they all really big dudes?
They're all pretty big.
They're not big. They're not big.
Well, they're from Brooklyn?
I mean, they're not like your average skinny tall guy in a band. Little Women is the best band in Brooklyn.
Whoa.
I second that opinion.
Oh, but I guess Darius lives in Queens. They're the best band in New York.
Ooh.
Drop the mic.
That's a big...
These are expensive mics to drop.
You heard it here on Snacky Tunes.
Yeah.
All five of you.
And for the three of you, when are you playing next?
I think our next show is probably going to be at the Jenkins House concert.
Oh, really?
I'm going to see if Austin's available. I haven't asked him
yet. We were supposed to play tomorrow night, but it got canceled.
It got canceled. Friends and Lovers is a new venue, but they're getting their permit straightened out.
Where is that?
It's in Crown Heights, actually. So hopefully they'll be up and running soon. But on the 21st, we might be doing a house show and then probably into the new year.
And what's next for you guys after shows?
After shows, well, we just recorded the song that we played first. And I would like to... I'm working on writing songs for a full-length album I'm hoping to record and have done by the spring and summer.
Ooh. And is it just you writing, or is there outside influence?
I write a lot of my own songs. Sam and I have been writing together a lot. And I love also taking on the songs of other friends. There are a couple songs on my EP were written by friends of mine, and I love reinterpreting other people's music, so we'll see what happens when I put it all down on tape.
And final question before we hear one more song. How do people get invited to your house jams?
You can check out my mom's blog. My mom had a blog long before I ever did.
First wave.
Did your mom teach you how to blog?
she kind of did, actually.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Mom, I can't post this photo.
Just rolls her eyes.
Ugh, come here.
She's so high tech. She's got her iPad.
Same with our mom. She always says she doesn't want to ever be feel left behind.
Cool. Oh, I hope she's listening today, right?
Yeah. Did you call her today?
Hi, Mom.
I did.
So did I. Hey, Mom. Hey, Dad.
So why don't you give people the nuts and bolts where they can find you, follow you, get the EP?
Well, you can check out my Bandcamp has two of the songs that we're playing today. And that's just Cassandra Jenkins Bandcamp and Facebook and CassandraJenkins.com. I've got my last record came out on vinyl. I printed it in Brooklyn. I pressed it in Brooklyn. And
who did you press it with?
With a company that is unfortunately no longer. Okay. It's called EKS.
And it's fortunate that they're no longer.
they really? Owe us some money. but I've got 100 vinyls left.
Ooh.
So
how many did you have?
Hotcakes. Only 300.
Okay. That's still pretty good. Hey, Brandon's saying 101.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can find those online. And you can get in touch with me on Facebook.
Well, great. Well, everyone, thanks for listening to Snacky Tunes.
I think we have one more show this year.
One more show. Who's the food guest next week?
I have to.
We have Rad Dads as a band next week. So listen up.
Yeah. And if you're around, come out to the Refinery 29 pop-up store, 201 Mulberry Street. Yeah, self-promo, baby.
Weird.
It's not weird.
A little weird. All right, well, I also want to thank Anne-Marie, Saltwater Farm,
and Paul and Kong and Rob. And shout out to Glassery, who makes the best rabbit dish in all of New York.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's...
Well, I mean, we were doubters.
We were doubters. And I told Sarah last night, I said, listen, this is like the fourth time I've been here. I've never ordered the rabbit dish. If you like rabbit, go... They say it's for two. That's ridiculous. Like... Maybe it's two of the little women, but like it's like a four-person dish. It's amazing. Have you had it?
I have.
It's amazing. The charred pieces taste like octopus. It's crazy. It's amazing. So hop on over there.
All right, and be back with one more episode. And thanks for listening. And what's the last song you're gonna take us out with?
Well, I like how much we're talking about animals on this show today. We had lobster talk. We had fish talk. We had rabbit talk. And this is a song called "The Bird."
Okay. Live on Snacky Tunes.
Now
what you are, and it does me no good, no good. Now I know, now I know.
Talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
Snacky Tunes is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.